Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I am culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be joined today by Kelly Jones. Now, Kelly Jones is the costume designer for The Beekeeper. Loved it. And I was really excited to get her on. It's funny, I found myself on another show kind of raving about the costume design. I was like, maybe I can get her on. And sure enough, she is here. So thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for liking the costumes in that. That was a fun movie to do.
Well, so let's start at the beginning. You have worked with David Ayer before. Mm-hmm. Does he reach out to you and say, hey, I'm working on this movie. I need you to come up with designs. Like, what does the actual start of this process look like for you?
For David's process, well, Bright, it was the first movie I did with him. So that one, I had to do a bunch of illustrations and I was working with four different illustrators and to get that going. And then since then, there's just been kind of a trust. So normally he'll just reach out and just be like, I didn't read this. I mean, he was like, I want you to do this movie. And I don't think I read the script for like a month after I was asked to do the movie. So it was originally supposed to go in Boston and then it ended up going in London. But yeah, that's the process. I mean, there's been a couple of movies. Like, he was signed on to Scarface briefly and I was doing that for him. And then there's been like, I think one or two TV shows and just like in the works. So yeah, we just collaborate really well together. So either him or one of his team members reaches out and just says, hey, like, David's doing this next project, you want to do it? And then I kind of find out what it's about later. So that's been the process with that, because David, I love working with David, because David just goes for it. Like, he just goes for it and he lets me go for it. And everything is, most of the worlds that he creates are kind of an elevated world, and just aesthetic is elevated. So yeah, so that's kind of how that happens. And I'd worked with Jason before, so stay there.
Right. So you worked with Jason Statham on Homefront, right? That was And it was funny because I haven't seen Homefront since it was in theaters. But it does feel like they have kind of a similar, these two characters have kind of a similar look and vibe to them.
Well, and I think when I was doing Homefront, because that was a long time ago. It was like 2011 or 12 or something like that. And I think that was one of the first times that Jason had worn a plaid and baseball cap. And so then since then, it's been like he's in suits. Or he's like, you know, he just has a very different aesthetic that kind of like bleeds into all of his other movies, except for that aesthetic. So then when I got this script and I was going over with David, and he just kind of wanted an Americana look for him. And then we started going over, you know, I did some illustrations and just going over like pictures, and I realized, oh, it's sort of similar to the other, to Homefront, but the character has a lot of similarities too. Like, trying to like live off the grid and live a quiet life. I mean, the character in Homefront, he had a daughter. But there's a lot of similar threads to those two movies. But we did want to make sure that the plaid and the hat did not look the same as the plaid and the hat in Homefront. So, and David was really good at kind of like maneuvering that and making sure they had like a little bit, I don't know, could to me a little bit kind of a cooler vibe than what Homefront had. That was a little bit more country, so.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. He says, hey, you want to do this movie? And you're like, yes. And then, you know, a little while later, you look at the script. When you're looking at some of the characters, so the reason I had kind of keyed in on the character design, particular, or the costume design in this film, was for a bunch of reasons, frankly, because every character in this movie feels like you can figure out what they're about almost just by looking at them.
Yeah.
So when I say that, like, the villains in this movie are these awful scammers who, you know, rip people off over the phone. And when you see the call center, they are, you just see them and you're dressed like, oh yeah, that is 100% what I imagine them looking like in these places. And I guess my question here then is, so do you sit down and just sketch out the designs, or do you just pull up like, here is what I'm going to put them in. Here are the pages at Nordstrom of the clothes I am going to I'm gonna put them in. Like, what is it, how does that work?
It depends. I think. I do have to say, I do give David credit for the beekeeper outfit, for the idea behind like kind of a fencing look, because that is something that he said to me because he wanted it to be really iconic, and he brought the idea of fencing into it and sent me like a pencil sketch. So then from that one, I went on to do even like a 360 illustration, and I worked with Aaron Sims Creative, who does all these incredible illustrations. And so I did probably, I don't know, I worked on maybe 50 different illustrations and just fine tuned it and honing in and honing in and honing in. So, and that was for Jason, his beekeeper look. And then I worked with the fabrics and I worked with the padding and the quilting and everything like that, just to make it look kind of what David had in mind for it. And then the rest, you know, some of the things like the guy that wore the goat suit. So basically David was, I think Anzalone was his name. David was basically like, just make the guy look as fucking obnoxious as you can. And I just started pulling references. So I also worked with the illustrator for that, starting pulling references. And to me, I mean, I forgot who I used as a template. I think it was a wrestler that every time he steps out in Vegas, he wears like a custom suit that has either his face on it or something super obnoxious. So I'm like, what's the most obnoxious thing this guy can wear? Well, he thinks he's the greatest of all time at whatever he's doing. So let's put a goat on and do a bunch of goats. So worked with the illustrator. And then, you know, I think goat was one option I had. And then I had a few other words on it and a few other like just images. And we settled on goat. So that's how that worked. And then, you know, I think most of like the character, the girl, the cop. So that also was illustrated. And then I don't know. It's just, I just know what he's looking for. So, and he does get, before he would get very specific with every character. And now he just will give me like a little blip of like make it go in this direction. And then I work, it also depends on budget with illustrations. So there's one thing with pencil sketches is one thing, but do an illustration to then get to the fabric and the making of it and the tailor, like that needs to be way more specific. So that's why I use an illustration team that I can translate my either pencil sketches or something like that to what they're going to put together for just because it looks like a real person. Like I actually use Jason's face, but we make sure that it's pretty fine tuned before we get to the fittings.
So there are two characters in this film in particular that jumped out to me as like, okay, this is like really interestingly designed. There was the female beekeeper who they have a big gas station fight, which is, she looks like a supervillain. Yeah. Like she's kind of dressed in like purple. And then there's a character later on. He's like a South African mercenary who almost looks like a bee himself, like a hornet or a wasp or whatever. And I see these two characters and I'm like, this is really interesting work. When you're looking at those two characters and those two designs, how did that work? How were you? What was the instruction there to like build that design?
So for Anna's set, it was always written that she was going to wear a trench coat, but that's pretty much what was written. Like Anna said, comes in a trench coat. And then David said something to me about like, let's just make her look crazy, like some sort of like Met Gala, but like nuts, like on steroids, like crazy, crazy look. And I needed to do the trench coat was because she has guns and she had like a whatever automatic rifle she had. So at one point, I think she was supposed to hide it and that's what she was going to take out. So that's how the trench coat was. And then I just went nuts with it. And the thing about Anisette's character that was so difficult is that all of that stuff needs to be fire retardant. So none of the fabrics can be synthetic. So I had to look at, which is really difficult to do. So you had to look like the dress had to just be silk, 100% silk, the jacket leather, like stuff that's natural that doesn't have any sort of synthetic in it because that would catch on fire. So, and the whole point is she is drenched in this like anti-fire stuff that special effects gives her. And so we needed to make sure that she wouldn't catch on fire. So I had to blend in the look that David wanted, which was something super nuts. And I also worked with an illustrator on that one too. And I think I gave him three different versions. And, you know, because I also wanted her to look kind of sexy. Like, there's not a lot of chicks in that movie. So I wanted her to just kind of be badass and sexy. And so, and then the colors needed to pop because it's dark. It was going to be dark. So just like how, like, the color and, like, there was like the fluid movement with the jacket. It just, like, you know, I think it was a bright pink jacket that we ended up using. And that was just, so it just shined. Like, it was a metal coated leather. So a foil coated leather. So that's kind of how that worked. And then the other guy, the South African guy, which I think that was a fake accent. I don't think he has a South African accent. I think he's from London. So when I saw the dailies, I'm like, oh, damn, he's going for it. But that was just like, this guy lives off the grid, but he's like, you know, whether he, I kind of wanted to incorporate, like, maybe he lives off the grid in like Bali, and maybe he's super nuts, but has like the Buddha beads and stuff like that. So I just went, just really crazy with him. I mean, the fitting alone, I didn't do illustrations for him. I did tell Dave, I did boards for him. And then the fitting with, I mean, the photos were nuts. And so that's the one that he landed on with the yellow cord jacket or shirt over it. So yeah, so that was fun. I mean, it's always a blast doing these projects with David because he's just like, go nuts. And I either take the specific notes he gives me, like with the beekeeper, like the basically he was like, you know, make it look somewhat like a fencing shirt. So, and so like with that, or he just is like, go fucking nuts. What I love about David is he's very precise, but he's not a man of a lot of words in his precision because he's so precise. So it's quick, it's to the point, and then I just run with it. So that's how those two characters kind of evolved.
And then that last sequence at the mansion in, you know, New England, wherever it is, somewhere off Boston, I just love that whole sequence because you have like three different groups of characters, right? You have the cops and the Secret Service guys, and those are kind of, you know, you kind of know what they're going to look like. And then you have the party goers who are at this thing, which it's like a birthday party fundraiser sort of thing. And they are dressed, I don't know how to put this delicately, but they are dressed kind of like rich douchebag is, no. I would say, like the aesthetic there. Is that wrong?
Because it's the crypto crowd, which is fast money, and it's new money, and it's trashy money for some people in that group. So I actually, you know, there's a couple different aesthetic with like the, because I was just like, I mean, whatever, I have like Coinbase or Coin, I have that one app and I have like a $500 in it, but I'm not a crypto person, so I don't know anything about it. So when I started going down these holes, it's like there's the crypto billionaires that look like Zuckerberg, like they're super normal. And then there's the crypto money guys that have like, they spend it all on the big yachts. And so when I started going down those holes, it's just kind of like, it's a lot of flash. It's a lot of logos. It's a lot of just obnoxious colors. It's to me, I mean, it's fun. Like it was definitely, so I did a whole board of that for David because he just really wanted to be that kind of like, kid in a candy store, like flashy, kind of obnoxious aesthetic, but also moneyed. So everything that they had, whether I got it at Forever 21 or I was calling Dolce, like it's they need to look expensive. So that was like the trick with that one. So yeah, but that was a blast to do.
With a scene like that, do you just roll up with, you know, giant racks of clothing for the extras and be like, all right, here's what we're putting you in, how does that
work? We pre-fit for, and I actually just did a project that had 350 nightclubbers in Atlanta, and it was the same sort of thing. You pre-fit everyone. So everyone comes in, there's like 2 or 3 weeks, and yeah, we have tons of racks and we've already put together, we've made a bunch of things, we put together, I have tables and tables of accessories. And so that's a sort of like all those BG, because you don't even see as many as there were actually in the movie. There were so many more that didn't get on camera, but those were, I think there were hundreds, but everything, that's really more styling than design, which is also fun. You know what I mean? Like that's very like you're putting everything together. That's very like Sex in the City. You know what I mean? To where it's like, you have 10 different pieces on someone from like the high low of the whole fashion world. So what we did, that's how we did it. So we pre-fit everyone on that, and everyone's wearing something of ours. Like no one really brought in their own stuff. So that was fun. Expensive.
Yeah.
expensive.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, no, I mean, you mentioned the budget. I'm curious what the if you can't say, don't say. I don't want to get anyone in any trouble. But I am curious what the actual costuming budget on something like this is. Do you basically get a credit card and they say, all right, spend up to this amount of money, or how does that?
No, I mean, honestly, for this movie, it was not nearly as high a budget as it looks. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, Bright, I think, was over $100 million, and that's not clothing. Like, clothing
anywhere
near that. But this wasn't, you know, I had to pull some favors. You know, I know a lot of people in the fashion world, so I pulled some favors and just kind of, you know, spend what you can. But no, that was the big issue in London, too, was, you know, we're over there. The city's so expensive. Clothes are so expensive there. So it's just like I had to kind of, again, it's like you do the high low. Like I had to beg, borrow and plead for certain things of certain, you know, designers that, you know, we knew in New York. And then, you know, then you kind of supplement with things that you can find at some of the cheap places and thrifting. So just that's kind of it. So, yeah, no, we didn't have an endless amount of money. I mean, we spent what we needed to. But, yeah, that was just overall that movie didn't have a ton of money.
Yeah. And then there's a third group of characters at this big party, which is the mercenary and his team, right?
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about again the guy with the South African accent, but then there's also like there's the guy with the cowboy hat. There are other, you know, was that just another situation where David Ayer was like, "All right, I want a guy who looks like this," or were you given kind of free rein there?
I think there were a couple. I think there were maybe like 20 or 30 of those guys in that group, and I think maybe there was two or three ones that David was pretty specific on. Like, I think someone, I forgot the cowboy hat. I think someone, he wanted someone maybe in a sari, like something crazy, because he wanted, basically the idea is that they all live in very crazy, different remote parts of the world, and they're all coming together out of the woodwork for this one mission. And they're like the best of the best, the most elite, like that sort of thing, but they all live off the grid, but in different, and so you just had to like, we had to like look at a map and be like, what is someone from this place look like? What is someone from, you know what I mean? And kind of like incorporate that. That's why there's really no like one theme with those guys. The only theme with those guys is that they all look like nuts. They look nuts. Like they all just look like, you know, they're just kind of living their own life. Again, like kind of off the grid somewhere. And a lot of the stuff was, they just picked up on their travels, or they only wear, you know, they have like two things that they wear, you know, because they're just not in the main cities. So that's kind of where we got that from.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned Bright, and I really enjoy Bright because it's this universe that is built that is both like kind of crazy and fantasy oriented, but it is also like a street level crime drama. You know, it's this really interesting mix of these two ideas. So when you were sitting there designing and trying to come up with costume ideas for that, what was your process like there, and how did that kind of come together? Because again, I think that's it's a fascinating mix of looks,
yeah,
more than anything else.
Well, I mean, so David wanted like the orcs to be the very kind of like street, and again, but it's an elevated kind of weird reality in these people. That's like, you know, there's orcs walking around with regular people, so elevated street meant elevated colors. So it would be like, I think it was like a bright orange, and the number, like the jerseys were really big. So, I mean, a lot of that stuff was, you know, what do people wear? Like, you know, I went down to like Sloss and Swap Meet, and I got a lot of that stuff because a lot of those, you know, it's big jerseys and it's big, you know, 501 string to fit, you know, jeans and chinos and stuff like that. So that was that world. And then I think originally with New Me, with the elves, I think we were originally going to go, David wanted to go like a darker version, like almost like a satanic sort of a thing. And when we did the screen test, from what I recall, like, I think Netflix was like, it's too dark. Cause they were just, there was like blood, and it's bloody anyway, but it was a lot. I mean, it was harder. And Netflix, I think, was like, it's a little bit too dark. So then there was like a pivot of like, okay, let's have them be in like custom suits. Like, let's have them be like really fine elves. And so that's when I like, then we made our fabric and we had got some brocade. I think we got that from Turkey. And then they were really dialed in. But, you know, David's really good at like, again, like, it's either this or it's that. There's nothing in the middle. So when he has to agree with it, like, if they want to pivot and he doesn't want to pivot, there's no pivot happening. So it's like that I think they explain, like, I think maybe a little too dark or a little too whatever. And he was like, okay, so let's go this. And so that's how that world, which was cool, because either one would have differentiated between the orcs, but mm-hmm. that was the route we ended up taking. So yeah, it was cool. It was a cool way to, it was a fun one to design. That was nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's shift from the kind of this elevated, heightened world of David Ayer movies to Naiad, which you did the costumes on that, the Oscar nominated film Naiad. What's the process like there? Because that's a movie that's more grounded. It's a movie about a real person and they, you know, how they really looked. When you're designing a costume for that, how do you approach that?
I mean, honestly, that was my second biopic after the first one I did was Straight Outta Compton, which was oddly another one that people ended up really receiving well. And those are, to me, way more stressful than the other ones because you are dealing with real people. And at both Straight Outta Compton and in Naiad, the subjects are still alive and they're around. Like Diana and Bonnie came down to the Dominican Republic where we were shooting. And I think what I do is I just ingest all the information online, all the books I can read, everything I can do about these people. And then I have to incorporate, because there's only so many pictures you see online. Like I don't see pictures of Diana just chilling at her house with Bonnie watching TV. So then what you have to do is incorporate, okay, this is what these people look like when they're doing certain things, when they're going on certain events. These are what they look like when they're just going on a run. So what do I have to put together the arc of their entire like world and like what they look like when they're just going to bed? Because there's a couple of scenes with Diana that she's just kind of like really thinking like in her bathroom about like, am I going to do this again? So I just have to build their world with keeping along the lines of the things that if you look her up, you're going to see exactly some of those pieces that are in that movie. Same with Straight Outta Compton. Like, like F. Gary Gray in the beginning was like, I don't want you to put one thing on Cube Dre or Eazy-E that I didn't see a picture of. Like no one wants to get that wrong. So, I mean, eventually I had to, because, you know, in the beginning, I mean, there was, I don't know, I think 88 changes per kid in that movie. So, but same with Diana and Bonnie, like I had to make sure. So what you do is just make sure you hit the points and then you kind of, you work with the middle, like you just make sure that, and then you also, it's really important to work with the production designer on that too. Cause a lot of like these biopics have to do with like color and tone of their real world and their life. And just kind of like, I don't know, building that whole world that really existed with it still being something that people want to watch and that's like aesthetically pleasing or not or disturbing or whatever it is. So that kind of, that's how that worked. I mean, I'm so glad. I mean, I couldn't have worked with nicer people on that movie. Like, I'm so happy that they're all getting like so much crazy recognition. And yeah, it was an awesome project to do.
Yeah, and then it was Straight Outta Compton you mentioned, and I you know that was a fascinating movie for me to watch just because it calls back to a very specific time from, you know, my teen years. Like I remember those outfits. Like I remember that look and that era of fashion. But you know, again, it is so specific. Is this the sort of thing where you are just like raiding thrift stores to find old versions of this? Were you having to make stuff new again? I mean, where did you find the clothes for it, I guess?
Well, I mean, thankfully, Dre and Cube were there every day. And so, like, Carl Kanai, like, they wore a lot of Carl Kanai. So Carl Kanai, they, like, made stuff for the movie. And then I was really connected through, I mean, not like I needed to, like, everybody was just throwing stuff at us, like Nike, Adidas and stuff. But I was connected through Nike because I put Air Force Ones on, you know, Sons of Anarchy, which tracks, like it all tracked the same. So I was just getting boatloads of Cortez, Air Force One, like I had a room full of it for these guys. And then I went down, you know, again, Sloss and Swap Meet. A lot of the stuff that Eazy wears, like these Charlie Brown polos with the big stripe, like you could see pictures, they still sell them there. Like I was actually down there a couple weeks ago when I was prepping this thing in Atlanta, and they're still there. So that's kind of how that worked. And a lot of it was, I was making t-shirts, like definitely like making the Raiders stuff and making the LA stuff. Like, I, you know, you had to make most of that stuff. So, but yeah, that's kind of how that worked. And then it was just a mad scramble to get these guys with that many clothes on. It looked real, you know, that looked like, because that movie was scrutinized for sure. Like this, those, I mean, these are icons. So it's like that had to be really, really dialed in. So I had a really good team. And Gary was great. So, and Dre and Cube just, I mean, I was just, I saw videos of the pool parties. Tamika was involved, who was Eazy-E's wife when he died. And she showed me all of this, all these photographs from when, you know, they were together and he was a lot younger. And they're, you know, so I did get to see quite a bit of footage of stuff that you can't really kind of Google right now, which was nice.
Yeah. And I mean, you just tossed off a number there, but 88 changes. I mean, they're like, was it basically just a new outfit for every scene?
Yes. Well, because it's same with Naya though. Like that, well, that movie spanned, it's 10 years. I think it was 85 to, I think it was about 10 years. So yes, every scene was a different outfit. And then you had to track them from when they were younger to 10 years older and make the, and then from when they had no money to had a ton of money. So it was like, you kind of had to track that. So yeah, there was, yeah, the changes. I mean, then there's of course, because it's a movie, it's a music movie, there's a montage. I think like every biopic, music or not, there's a montage. And so the montage is, oh my God, like we shot him in a day and it went from like the montage of them being at the studio. And I think Gary wanted to do 5 shots, which is 5 outfits each, which is for 5 guys is whatever, 25 outfits. All of a sudden he wants to do like 15 shots. And so then you're looking at like, it's a crazy amount of clothes, crazy amount of hats, crazy amount, just like a Naiad, crazy amount of bandanas. I had so many bandanas in my trailer, crazy amount of swimsuits. Like Annette was just, I mean, that woman stayed in the water in the Dominican Republic all day, every day. Like she is a rock star. So yeah.
That's crazy. All right. So let's shift to TV then, because you are credited, I think, as the costume designer on the whole run of Sons of Anarchy. Yes. Is that right? Yeah. So I love the Sons of Anarchy. I watched it live when it was on. It's a great show. It's FX on Hulu if you want to go back and rewatch it. But that's another show that has like a very specific, distinct look, right? Like all of the guys in the motorcycle gang, you know, have, it's interesting because they have a specific look because they're all part of the same gang, but they also have an individual look, yes, which is, you know, reflective of their character and how different they are. So let's talk about the difference between TV and movies a little bit, because so you know, you have a 10 or 12 episode season. You have to maintain continuity. You have to design for characters who are coming and going. How does that actually work when you sit down and you're like, all right, this is what we're doing this season?
I mean, I think it just evolves. Well, with Sons, it was nice because it evolved with the guys. Like a lot of the guys would have the input on like certain pieces they wanted to wear, like certain ways they wanted to wear the bandanas, certain ways Charlie wanted to wear his rings. And so it's just, I don't know, I wanted to make sure they all looked different and that it was something that was maintainable for whether it was going to be, you know, no one knew after the first season. It didn't get the best ratings. It didn't get good ratings until it went into, what's it called, where you could watch it on demand or whatever. So like that next season 2 was when everyone knew this was a hit. So then it's like you just have to sustain that. And the good thing, like, I think I saw that you interviewed Sean Ryan. I think you said that.
Yes.
Yeah. So I started as a costumer on The Shield. This is aging myself. So Sean, it was one of Sean's shows. That's how I met Kurt. So Kurt was a staff writer on The Shield. And when he brought me into Sons, I didn't really talk to Kurt. Like, I don't know. Like, there's a couple of staff writers like Glenn Mazzara and stuff that have, like, I'm actually still talked to. But Kurt was someone, you know, he's pretty quiet when he was come to set for his episodes. And I only did the first season before I started designing. And I don't know, like, we maybe spoke a couple times. So when I got called in for Sons, you know, he just got, it wasn't a lot of conversation. He was like, listen, he's like this. I forget exactly how he said it, but he was like, so I just want to let you know, like, this is like a t-shirt and like tank tops and jeans show. And, you know, I want you to do it, but just know, like, you're not going to get recognition for design off this TV show. And I'm like, okay, cool. He's like, I just want people to look good. Oh, he goes, He goes, all I know is I don't want to think of the clothes. So if I'm thinking of the clothes, then you're not doing, if I'm watching the show, thinking of the clothes, you're basically not doing a good job. Like he's just, he doesn't want to be distracted. He didn't want it to be too over the top. He didn't want it to be anything that's just like looked cheesy or just looked bad. So I don't know. I just kind of, you know, it, everything kind of evolved with that. Like Katie looks sexy and Maggie looks like hippie sexy and the guys just all looked like sexy dudes. You know, I mean, I didn't want to do any chaps. I just, you know, and a lot of people would wear, you know, just for protection when you're riding on the roads. I did know a lot of the guys that rode actually that were on the show, like they'd come in, they'd wear leather chaps. Or there's a lot of like the Hells Angels, because I got to know quite a few of them. There's some logos and stuff. And I don't know, for my personal aesthetic, I find sometimes that is distracting for TV. Like I like to keep stuff really clean. And so that's, and I'm fine. I'm good with plaids, a couple of stripes here and there with Katie. I like the lace. I like the leather, but like, I wanted to make sure sometimes, I wouldn't say that, I don't know. Sometimes it's too much. Like the logos are just too much. It's like, that's not what you're there to look at. So I do think that is, I did understand what Kurt was saying. Like, don't like take this as a step of like, I'm going to just like put my major stamp on this and make this look. No, I just did it what I thought looked. A lot of people romanticize that life of the you know, outlaw motorcycle rider. They did then, they do now, but not a lot of people are in that life. So I thought of like, what if someone's working in an office and they want to, and they see this show? I wanted it to appeal to how people would actually want to dress if they could get a piece of this life. And to me, that was just simplicity kind of, and just sexy is kind of what I ended up doing for that show, which ended up working. I mean, I loved the jewelry. I mean, everyone had a wallet chain. Jax ended up having those sun's rings at the end. Katie always wore some jewelry. So that's kind of like the bells and whistles I put on that show. And everything was like super aged and gritty. And so, yeah, that show was fun.
Yeah.
I'm still friends with all those people. So, yeah, it was fun.
I mean, it's interesting to hear you say that about what Kurt Sutter was saying about not wanting to draw attention to the costuming, because when I look back and think about that show, I mean, I think about the motorcycles, obviously. I think about the the violence and the Shakespearean nature. But like, I really think about I think about the look of that show, which I just loved. I loved that, as you mentioned, like this is kind of what. If you're working in an office sort of guy, yeah. Like what would it look like to be on a motorcycle? Like that would be, you know, that could be a good look. I think you could maybe, but also again, just the distinctiveness of the gangs. I mean, the Mayans versus was there a gang called the Aztecs? I can't remember. Yeah, and then against the Suns. I mean, like it just, they all had their own distinct look, their own kind of cultural attachment, and it all worked really well.
Thank you. It was definitely a fun, that's actually how I got straight out of Compton, to be honest, because I didn't really at the time know much. I was a little too young for NWA. So when I got called for it, I was surprised. I got called for it and I went and I met F. Gary Gray, and he was a huge fan of Sons of Anarchy. And so I realized when I started looking at the aesthetic of NWA versus the aesthetic that it built in Sons of Anarchy, I'm like, oh yeah, some of it's the same. Like I used some of the same shoes and some of the same jeans and some of the same, you know, the t-shirts, like the pro clubs, like the sizes of it. Cause I think the guys like in Sons of Anarchy, like, I don't know, I just thought that was a cooler look in general. Just, you know, just like the thicker t-shirt with basically just, and the shrink to fit pants and just like the way those moved, you know, for everything. So yeah, so that was, yeah, which is weird that those two connected, but that's kind of how that connected.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it is interesting. What are some of the influences? What are some of your influences when you were, you know, even growing up watching movies or TV or whatever, or just like sitting there thinking about your job? When you were sitting there thinking like, all right, this is what has influenced me in my design idea, my aesthetic. What do you point to?
I mean, the two movies that I love, I mean, Scarface always. Like, I mean, that was like probably my biggest heartbreak. Like when David called me and said he was doing Scarface and he wanted me to do it, I was working on a project at the time. And I think my answer was, if I could do this movie, this remake, and then die after and never do anything, I would die happy. Like Scarface and just, like the aesthetic of that. I mean, I also always loved that world. And then I also, movies like, you know, The Town has always, Jeremy Renner and Ben Affleck, like how that movie is designed and just the nuance of it. It is so, and Blake Lively's costumes, which I did a lot, sometimes Sons of Anarchy, like the hookers and the strippers and stuff. Like I kind of, you know, it's that sort of same aesthetic, just like that dirty, like a little dirty and a little sexy. And so those are like the two movies that have always stood out to me. And I know that Scarface was way before The Town, but yeah, I kind of like always kind of go back to those when I think about like, God, what like did I think was just like absolute perfect. I just don't do, I mean, to me, like doing a movie, like I saw Oppenheimer the other day, and I mean, Ella Mirajnik was actually someone who, pretty one of the people that helped get me into the business, but she is a master. But I watched that movie and I'm like, oh my God. Like, it's to me, like, just so, I don't know, like something like Titanic, something like Oppenheimer. I just, that overwhelms me in a way that I don't even know how I would react doing that, or that I would probably even like be too, I wouldn't even want to take the meeting. I would just be like, there's other designers that can just are better suited for it. I feel like the movies that I've done and even the comedies that I've done, you know, you tend to fall in what you're suited for. And I think I'm suited for that as this aesthetic. That's the aesthetic that's always that resonated with me. So that's kind of why I'm like, and then the comedies that I've done that, you know, the, I don't know, those are also like a whole different other, like, I don't know, branch of stuff that I think is, you know, something that's fun to do. But yeah, so that's kind of the two movies or the movies that I think about.
Well, what's the difference between dressing a comedy and dressing and some of the other stuff we've talked about? I mean, when you're thinking about how to do it.
Well, I mean, a lot of the times it's with the color palette, and then but comedy is like it depends on who you're dressing, because if they're so broad, like you don't want to do anything. Like if the actor's so broad, you don't want to do anything too. Like I did Parks and Rec, and besides a couple things with Amy, like I kept it pretty narrow because they're so broad, and I didn't want to make anything corny unless you need to make it corny. Like I did a movie called The Wrong Missy, and Lauren, the actress, comes down in like an obnoxious outfit for this like very conservative day party, and I'm like, let's just sequence it up. So, and it ended up being really funny, and I got a lot of comments, and some people like actually wanted to buy the dress, and I'm like, well, that's crazy. So yeah, but comedy's great, but also comedy is a lot of things happen to the clothes. Like, I don't know what it is, and maybe it's just the shows I've done. Like, comedy is very physical in a way that is different than even, like, the action movies I've done. Like, there's, like, cakes being thrown on people and people being pushed off. It's, like, almost like with Wrong Missy, I think she died. Like, she hit, like, so many rocks when she fell down this cliff and, like, but she doesn't die. Like, of course, then she gets in the water and then a big wave splashes over. So the amount of clothes you have, it's crazy, but it's fun. Like both equally is fun.
Yeah. Well, when you mentioned Oppenheimer, when you're looking at the movies that are out right now, what do you look at and you say, wow, that's amazing. That is a good look. That is a well-dressed movie.
Well, okay. Well, Oppenheimer, clearly, because Ella Mirajnik is like a goddess. I mean, God, she did like Bridgerton too. Like, and she's done everything. I mean, back in the day, forever. Honestly, and I shouldn't say this because I'm nominated for a CDG award, and but it's against Saltburn, and that's a movie that I think she, I don't know who that designer is, but she is, everyone's like, oh, what if you win for NIAID? And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to, Saltburn. Like, have you seen that movie? Like, it's so phenomenal. And I say this because of dressing sort of like even the crypto world and the billionaire world for like certain parties, like to get that aesthetic right, that is not easy. I mean, that is, she did such a good job, and that was even somewhat period. Like, I think that was in 1992. I think the banner in the college is welcome class of 96, which would have meant that something like it's 92.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. So that's like the movies that are out now. Like, I don't think Saltburn is nominated for any of like the big awards, but that one, I just think the costumes of that are phenomenal. I just didn't like bow down. So yeah. I'm trying to think of what else I've seen. I want to see Poor Things because I haven't gone to the theater to see that. But yeah, that's another one. Even every every commercial I see for it, the costumes just look phenomenal. So, and then Barbie, but duh, I mean, that's crazy. Like, that's how fun was, how fun did she have? How much fun did she have? So yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that was pretty much everything I wanted to ask. I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked, if there's anything you think folks should know about, you know, what you do. I mean, this is my goal with this episode is to introduce people to the world of costume design, because I do think it is, again, a movie is many different parts. It's sound design. It's how you hear things. It's the cinematography. It's what they show you. But costume design is a totally underrated element of how you feel about a movie, what you learn about the characters in a movie. And I want people to appreciate what you and folks like you do a little more than I think they do.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. I mean, that's what, like, I always say, like, costumes in and of itself is not going to make a movie great, but great movies with great costumes makes the whole piece wonderful and like something that, you know, is remembered. So that's something that I'm just, you know, I'm just, every time I get hired by a director, I'm like, I'm just here to fulfill your vision. This is your movie. But I do know that costumes play like such an integral part, but it's just such a collaboration. And so, yeah. So, I mean, I love it. I love the projects I've done. I get excited for the projects in the future. I love collaborating with directors and the cast and, you know, so yeah, and my teams and everything like that. So yeah.
So that's all right. Kelly, thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're
I really
welcome.
Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you for having me.
And once again, I am Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and I'll be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.